This interview is being conducted on Wednesday, May 26, 2010, with Mr. Bill Lusso at the Indian Prairie Library in Darien, Illinois. My name is Deb Barrett. Mr. Lusso was born on April 24, 1946, in Chicago, Illinois. He is a retired corporate travel agent and learned of the Veterans History Project through one of his neighbors, Diane Sims, who is another volunteer on this project. Mr. Lusso has kindly consented to be interviewed for this project, and here is his story. Bill, where were you when just before you entered the military? What was your life like? Where were you living? What were you doing?
I had been in college for 2 years and did terrible. So I went, just looking for a summer job, I went to the airlines. And at that time, you could get on the airport, just drive on. And so I was driving to the TWA hangar, and I passed the American Airlines hangar on the way. They had a sign, help wanted. I went in, interviewed right away, took tests, got hired. Worked there for 12 years. It was great.
That was before you went in.
No, but after 1 year is when the service came.
Okay. And so was it?
Because I had lost my school deferment.
Okay.
So it didn't take the draft board too long. And I got a notice for a physical. And when I got that, I knew I didn't want to go in the Army. I just knew I didn't want to go in the
Army.
And
this was what year?
This would have been 67.
So this was the height of Vietnam.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And let's see. So I went to the Navy Reserve, and because I had friends that were in there.
Okay, let's go back a second. You got a draft notice.
I got a draft notice.
And
no, I didn't get a draft notice. I got a notice for a physical.
Oh, a notice to come for a physical.
Right.
So you'd had a deferment for school.
Right.
When you left school, you lost the deferment.
That was gone, right.
So come in for a physical.
Right.
And that would reclassify.
That's what triggered everything. let's get going.
So what was your reaction? What was your family's reaction when that came?
We were resigned.
You knew it was.
Yeah, it was. Everybody else was doing it. You know?
Did you have friends in the military at the
I
time?
I did. Two family. In the Army, two in the Navy Reserve. That's why I went there. So I was taking the exam for the Navy Reserve, and in the middle of it, somebody comes in, takes my paper, says, "You've got a draft notice sent out already. Can't take it."
Okay.
Said, "I never received a draft notice." You know, I was in a panic. He said, "Well, you better get to your draft board." So I did. I went to the draft board. They gave me a letter, a one-week exemption. You know, they did send that draft notice out.
Okay.
So they gave me a one-week exemption. I got in. I was sworn in the Navy Reserve, and it was great.
So you didn't have to go to the Army.
I didn't go to the Army at all. No.
That 1 week gave you that time to do the testing.
Right.
Okay.
And then...
And why did you choose the Navy?
Because all the way back to when I was a kid, there used to be a TV program. I think it was called Tales of Annapolis, something like that. And I was always fascinated by boats and the water. And I just thought it was neat. I like the uniform.
Okay.
So I signed on the reserves, which at that point I would have to go for a year of meetings once a week.
Okay.
And at the time I was working at American. Mm-hmm. And then after that year, I knew I had to go to active duty. So that was on January of 69. I went to San Diego to a school. It's called a Class A school.
Okay. Where were you sworn in?
In Chicago.
In Chicago.
At the
at
Naval
Great
Reserve.
Lakes?
No, at the Naval Reserve Training Center.
Where was that? Do you remember?
Monroe in the Lake. Monroe,
okay.
Right to the end, and it was right at the end of Monroe. Now it's part of the yacht club down there. Oh, basic training. I forgot about that.
So you were sworn in, and when you were sworn in...
Then we... Ooh, this is where it gets gray.
Okay.
Yeah, I had to go to basic training first, I'm sure.
Right. So you...
And dates...
Did you go to basic training in Chicago?
I went to basic training in Great Lakes, but the reserve program... if I was in the regular Navy, I'd go for 6 weeks. The reserves, you only go for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then you go for 2 weeks right after that on a ship that's a training ship.
Okay.
Moored right at Great Lakes. And so that was the month of It was December.
69, you said?
Probably, no, probably was when I... Wow.
Or 70?
They might have gone all the way back to 66.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I just can't remember.
That's
I'm
fine.
Sorry.
So you were sworn in and
went to
tell us what that day was like when you got, how did you get to the base, or how did you get to where you were being sworn in?
Up to well, you get sworn in downtown.
Right.
You know, and then you go to Great Lakes on my own. I took a train up there
Okay.
And it was cold. I remember it was snow and ice.
Okay.
And not knowing a thing.
Uh-huh.
And you check in at the guard shack, and they tell you where to go. As soon as you walk in that building, you are the lowest piece of anything on this earth. So
tell us about that. What did they do when you got there? What did they have you do?
First of all, they assigned you a bunk, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the next day was haircuts.
The next day?
Yeah.
So you had a...
Because I went there at night, yeah.
Okay.
And then the next morning was... Well, that was at haircuts. And
was this like a big group?
Oh, yeah. How many were? Maybe 100. And we were all on one floor of a barracks.
Okay. Haircuts?
Haircuts.
Just shave it off.
Did you learn real quick? You don't talk. You don't move. You don't.
What happened if somebody did?
They would just make it hard. I remember one incident where they wake you up in the middle of the night for inspection, and you stand up, and the master at arms is going down there, and he found some guy, and he rubs his cheek, and he says, "You shave, sailor?" No, did you say recruit? Because you weren't a sailor yet.
You weren't a sailor yet.
You were recruit.
Right.
And he says, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir." Well, he didn't buy it. So he took him back in the train. And they just took a razor and they shaved him, you know, dry shave.
Ouch.
So he came back and his face was beet red, but everybody shaved. You know, the message gets across real quick that.
So when they, you checked in, they told you where your bunk was. Were guys in there already?
Yeah, there were some.
All right. How did they wake you up that first morning?
Oh, it was about 3:00. And it's like you see in the movies, a guy had a trash can lid.
Uh-huh.
And he just would bang and bang and bang and bang. And up you were, and you'd stand at attention to the foot of your bunk. And there he would do the inspections, and he would, everything really had to be just so.
So was it a case where you had to, like, get up and make your bunk right away? Or jump up? And
No, you...
How much time did you have to make
your bunk? Oh, maybe 2 minutes at the most.
Uh-huh.
To have everything...
Everything order.
Squared away, yeah.
Now, were you able to have any of your personal effects with you,
no,
or did they
no.
confiscate
No,
them?
At that point, the only thing you have is Navy issue.
What did they do with all your personal things?
I don't know.
You don't remember?
I don't remember. But all you had was Navy stuff. And then we'd go to classes and...
Okay. Well, the first morning, okay, so they got you up at 3 o'clock. You jumped out of bed.
It was a rude awakening.
not a gentle shake
right.
on your shoulder,
right.
yeah.
And it was... your mom is not taking care of you anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that was it.
So what did the inspection, and what was he looking for? The shave, obviously.
Well, you've got a manual.
Uh-huh.
The Blue Jackets manual.
Blue Jackets manual?
And that tells you the Navy way.
And how long had you had that copy?
Not long.
Like, since the previous
I probably had it when I was going to the reserves.
Okay.
No, I take that because I get this confused because I had to go through basic training before I went to the reserves. I just had to.
So you were
So it would have
expected...
been part of my issue, I guess, when I got there. Yeah, because that's where I got my uniforms.
Okay. So they gave you like 2 minutes to
get your inspection.
Make your rack, right?
Yeah.
It's not a bed. It's a
no,
rack.
No, and it's got to be squared away.
Okay. And how
I never had a problem. Never.
How did they decide what was appropriate?
Book.
Was it like, you know, everything tucked in?
Everything tucked in, everything in order in your locker. Shoes had to be facing a certain direction. Everybody you lose all personal identity.
Right.
Every locker, every bed, every person looks the same.
Everything had to be identical.
Down. Right.
So you can open all the lockers and they should be
And
like
they should be exactly the same.
Okay.
Exactly the same.
And did anyone's locker not match? Or?
Oh, yeah.
And what and then would they do?
They would just pull all the stuff out and they'd have to repack it.
Okay.
There was no free time.
Okay. So they got you up at 3 o'clock in the morning. They did this. What did you do then? Was it exercise? Oh. Was it breakfast?
Yeah, we would have exercise outside. Then you go to breakfast.
What kind of calisthenics?
Just, yeah, because it was in the middle of winter. We couldn't do a whole lot, so.
Okay.
You know, jumping jacks and.
And you went to breakfast as a group?
Oh, yeah. We did everything as a group. You didn't walk. You marched everywhere as your unit. You got through the chow hall. You were in a single line. Like, use service terms here.
Yeah.
Nut to butt.
Okay.
That's how you line up.
Right.
Nut to butt. There's no gap between you, man. You just, you walked in. I don't know if you had 15 minutes to eat. But, you know, there was no sitting around talking with the guys.
Did you tell them, what you wanted?
No. You just take your tray and you go down the line. And then but you sit down, you start eating, and okay, let's go, whether you're done or not. You know, it's
okay.
And then it was a full day of, one day was medical. We got all the shots that we needed. It was in one of the drill halls, or huge buildings there at Great Lakes. It was interesting. That part was interesting. You know, the whole facility and
right. So they just lined you up and just went down the line?
They just went down the line. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, nothing was personal.
Yeah.
Nothing was personal.
Because you weren't a person. You were
right.
A group.
We had a qualifier with the, what did we shoot? Probably an M1.
So we had
rifle training.
Had you shot a rifle before?
No, never.
Okay. And what was, how did it feel or?
It was a big bang, big shock. I did all right in there.
Okay.
Then we go to the pool.
You had to be able to swim.
They want you to swim.
So what did you have to do to swim?
They line us all up. It's a big pool.
Yeah.
They line us all. Who can't swim? They want to know who can't swim. Raise your hand. Okay. A couple guys came out and it was fine. Okay, now you're going in the pool. You don't just go into the pool. You go up to a tower that's about 20 feet high.
Like jumping off a ship.
And that's it. They told us to cross our arms over our shoulders like this, and you just step off and go down.
With your clothes, with your uniform.
With our uniform. And then we had to tread water for 5 minutes. And trying to take your pants off.
Right.
Tie the cuffs so you can have a...
Some buoyancy.
You take the pants and put them down, and you float on them, And there were guys gasping. They couldn't swim.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't say so at the beginning. And they're gasping and trying to get to the side and trying to get to the side. And the petty officers are on the side, and they got poles that are about 10, 20 feet long. And
pushing you away.
As they're coming along, they just push them back out there until they're gasping, until they're going down. And then they would send somebody to get them.
Did that happen? They had to send people in?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what would they do?
Why didn't you tell me you couldn't swim? And at this point, they were scared because they almost drowned.
Right. So you had to tread water for 5 minutes.
5 minutes. I don't know how many laps we had to swim.
But after treading water.
Right.
Okay.
So it was just...
They didn't care how you swam,
just do it.
Just
so you're alive, yeah.
Okay. And then you got out of the water and...
We got out of the water and... I don't know what we did. There was just constant classroom training.
What sort of classes did you
learn? Well, you learn etiquette, the Navy etiquette.
For example?
Oh, who to salute, who not to salute.
What was the difference?
For boot camp, anybody that had an epaulette.
Okay.
Even no matter what kind of a petty officer they were, they got a salute. All officers got a salute. Of course, in the real world, the enlisted men, no, you don't salute anybody.
Right.
No matter what. But all the officers you do, you don't salute indoors. You take your hat off every time you walk indoors. Never put your head on a table. You know, it's just...
What did you do if you...
Tuck it in the back of your seat, in your back of your pants. And, uniform, of course, how you wear the uniform. The knot had to be tied in a perfect square knot, not a granny knot, on your neckerchief. The hat would be an inch above your eyebrow.
Okay.
Squared away, not sideways, not on the back of your head.
Right.
Not on it. This is, of course, when you get out again, it's all different.
But they're trying to create that discipline.
That's right. And it was good. For me, it was good.
Did the people get stopped if they didn't?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And who would stop you?
Any of the petty officers.
Okay.
And the master in arms was tough guy.
And what was master of arms? What was his role?
Like in the Marines, he would be the drill sergeant. Okay.
The equivalent of the drill sergeant.
Right.
Do you remember his name?
I don't. No. Then of course we were doing cleaning constantly. You know, we'd clean in the morning. I mean, a real scrub down. And then in the afternoon, you have to do it again. You know, just
busy
work. Everything. All the floors, the windows. Of course, there were no blinds in the windows. You know, everything was stark. Very stark.
How many men were in your barracks? Was it like one long line?
Yeah.
But how many men?
Like I say, it was about 100, probably 50 on each side in double racks.
Were you on the top or the bottom?
Yeah, I was on the bottom in basic. The latrine. That was interesting because there's no doors.
Right.
That was the first time I experienced that.
Could be a little
uncomfortable
at first. Yeah,
at first. You had to wash your clothes. There were no washers and dryers.
How did you wash them?
You took your clothes. They had a big washing table. You put it on the table, and you had a scrub brush, and you scrubbed it.
Okay.
And then you rinse it. It was...
Just one step above beating it on a rock.
That's right. Very, very primitive.
And how did you dry them?
What did we do? Well, where we did our calisthenics, they went outside, and it was cold.
So they
They did eventually dry.
Okay.
They had... We never used clothespins. I can't remember how we did it. But I know we didn't have clothespins. They were tied on somehow. Can't remember.
Did they have your day divided so like you had physical activity in the morning and school
the day,
the
you
afternoon?
Didn't know what, or you didn't know what was coming from.
Okay.
One day, you know, they got you up at 2 o'clock and out you went, you know, boom.
Did you have any sort of work that you were expected to do on your own, like homework type of things?
Oh.
Or was it all done
we were never,
in class?
Well, I guess we were tested. Too vague.
Okay.
I don't know. Can't remember.
Okay. So you said you had breakfast, lunch, and dinner as a group.
Right.
Everything.
In very short time.
What was a typical dinner like, say?
You get your meat and potatoes and everything was there. You just didn't have time to eat it.
Okay.
That was the, you know, as a recruit, you had no time.
Right. So this was for your first 2 weeks?
It was for the first 2 weeks. And we went on there was a ship moored there, just a small, it was a patrol craft escort. What was the name of it? The Haver, Havre. And since I've been on it, I've looked up the history of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was part of the support at the landing of Iwo Jima. They supported off Okinawa. It was one of the ships in Tokyo Bay when they had the signing of the... So there was some history to it. And it was just... And that was the first time I was ever on a ship. And it was...
Did they tell you the history of it?
Different.
When you
no,
were going
no.
In?
No.
It was just there.
Right. And there you learned... you'd stay on a quarterdeck watch. And started to begin to feel like a Navy, you know, like what you had in mind.
Did they have any sort of ceremony or anything marking your passing from being a recruit to going on this other ship?
Well, I was still a recruit at that point.
You were still a recruit.
I was still a recruit.
Right. But after basic, your abbreviated 2-week basic, did they do anything?
There had to be some kind of a graduation, but I...
You don't remember? No. Okay.
But when we were on the ship, again, we were in the winter, and I had a bottom rack, and it was an old ship, so there were five racks.
And how much room was there?
There was no room. There was no room. I couldn't roll over.
You were kind of staring at the back of
the guy's
head.
You were looking at the canvas above you. And I woke up one morning, and my shoes were always right under my rack, and they were floating.
So, that's not a good sign on a boat.
So we all mustered, and we were all on deck, and there was a problem. And ice had hit the hull, and it split a seam.
Oh, wow.
So we were taking water on all night in one of the magazines.
How far below deck were you there?
At that point? Well, the magazine was the next deck lower, so that's as low as it went.
Okay.
So we were pretty far. But there were only maybe three or four decks on this because it was a small ship.
Right.
And then...
So if your shoes were floating, what did you do?
Dry
put
them
on?
No. They eventually put a list on the ship, and they put welders over the side. And got it welded, and we were back in business. But again, it was basic training. We were cleaning and polishing and cleaning and polishing. But the food was good.
Uh-huh. How did it differ from your 2 weeks on land?
It just felt more... Like you were a unit, like you were.
That unit feeling was
starting. It was starting to form, yeah.
Okay.
You know, you knew guys now for 2 weeks, and it wasn't quite as stressful as those first 2 weeks.
Did any guys not make it through those first 2 weeks?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. No. So you all, as a unit, went on to the ship.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Now, I won't say all. Because others had different orders. This was called back-to-back.
Okay.
It was kind of a special way of doing it.
Right.
And then after I got out of there, then the meetings were for a year.
So you were on the ship, and you had these, this was for 2 more weeks, you said?
2 more weeks.
Okay. Same kind of hours? I mean, did they get you up at 3 in the morning?
No, there was more of a routine. You had a... Yeah, what was it called? Watch, quarter, and station bill. And your name would be on there as to where you were, what you were doing.
Okay.
What the uniform of the day was. It was just, again, it was easing you into what to expect when if you got a ship out of basic training.
So, okay. So you were still getting up, still awakened the same kind of way, or how were you awakened?
No, then on the ship it would just be reveille, reveille.
Okay, and at night, what
hands,
time were you expected to?
It was early. Again, I don't know, but there was a little library on there. You could take books out. You know, you had some free time.
You did have some
free
time. Daily or a couple times a week?
Maybe a couple times a week.
Were you able to communicate with your families
at
all during these 4 weeks?
No.
Not on land or on the ship?
No.
Were you able just to call and say,
no.
I'm here? Nothing.
I didn't. I don't know if others were.
Okay.
I can't even remember telephones. There may have been.
So you couldn't get mail or anything?
No.
Okay.
I never did.
But you did have some free time on the boat?
On the boat.
Okay. And when those 2 weeks were over?
Then I started the obligation to go in downtown every week for a reserve meeting.
And so you were back living at home?
Right.
Okay.
And working at the airport.
And what was what did your work entail?
I was a gate agent.
Okay.
So I would, at that time, I had control of the flight. I met every passenger that came on because I had to assign them a CITUS.
So this was your civilian job,
right.
And then you would go and just
then I would
report.
Go to the Navy, and there it was almost all classroom training.
Okay. What kind of training did you get?
More of the. The Blue Jackets manual. You know.
Okay. Was it more theory and strategy and things like that? Was it more hands-on?
It was more...
Here's how you shoot this gun. Here's how you control this operation.
Is, yes. And most of it was to get you into a specialty.
Right.
Somewhere down the line that you would take... I remember taking radio training... you know, can you tell the difference between this and this and this? And
So hearing the sounds and trying to make the distinction.
So I knew I wasn't going to be a radar man because I couldn't tell the difference between the bleeps. And then they take a test on mechanical aptitude. I knew nothing about cars.
Okay.
But because I worked at the airline, uh-huh. I had knowledge of typewriter and keyboard. And So I was clerical.
Okay.
So that was, and then they designated me as storekeeper, which is the supply end of the Navy. So.
Okay. And was that storekeeper, was that on land? Was it at a
base? That's your, like I said, there's a rate and a rating.
Mm-hmm.
So my rate at that time was a seaman apprentice. Eventually I became a seaman, and then they attached a rating to it, and they call it a striker. This is what you're going for. And then I was a SKSN. I was a storekeeper seaman. That's what I was going for.
Okay.
And then when I got the crow, then I was a petty officer, and I was a petty officer third class.
So you had your 4 weeks of training, and then you had the year.
The year of meetings. We did a lot of drill, a lot of marching.
Okay. How long were these meetings?
7 to 10. So 3 hours.
Okay.
And then two breaks. They hit a little restaurant down here. And at that time, there was a submarine berth next to us. And it was the USS Silversides, which had a very good war work in World War II. Now it's over somewhere in Michigan.
Okay.
But the meetings, they were educational, but they were boring. I mean, it was a long night.
Yeah.
It was just a long night.
Okay. And when that year was up?
It was very routine. Then I got my orders that I was going to go to San Diego.
Okay.
For this school, Class A school, to become a storekeeper.
Okay.
The whole family, I really never thought mm-hmm. about Vietnam and what was going on. Or,
mm-hmm.
You know, every once in a while, gee, somebody from our class got killed over here. You know,
mm-hmm.
but it was over there. You know, it wasn't a daily thought.
Right.
Like now, you know, in Afghanistan, I don't think about what's going on daily.
You
know, I know that there's a war going on there, but it just didn't register. It was very, very naive.
So
when going to San Diego, the whole family's there, and. It was tough. Then I didn't know about Vietnam.
Okay,
that was when the realization hit me that I may never see my family again. And it was a night flight. It was nice going out.
Yeah.
Because when I worked there, of course, the guys take care of you. So I flew out first class to Los Angeles.
So did you fly on commercial flights?
No, yeah, I flew American.
Okay.
I had a government transportation request, but I just
American
I did my own. Yeah, I flew my disco pass.
And so you flew to San Diego?
Flew to Los Angeles and then to San Diego.
Okay.
And that was a real rough flight over the mountains, I remember. Got in there late. Checked in about maybe 11 o'clock. I had to be in before midnight.
And were you checking into a ship? Or
I was checking into a school.
Okay.
So the first night I was in they call it a transfer barracks. And coming in and in the night, there's no lights. And, try and find a place to sleep. And
so just pick any bunk that's available.
Yeah, but you don't. Yeah, I could. You can't see. And,
right.
So I remember climbing to an upper bunk, and I just slept in my uniform. I didn't want to wake everybody up. And then in the morning when I woke up, there's a light right above my head. But then it was to clear out of the transfer barracks and then go to the barracks where that was going to be for the next 3 months.
So that was basically just an administrative,
right.
Go sign in.
Yeah, sign in, paperwork. And then now we're going to transfer you to the school, and then you sign in over there. And
so with everybody in the barracks that you ended up in there for the 3 months, everybody was in the same specialty?
In the same class, yeah.
Okay.
Now some had been out in the fleet and came back for this. Some of them, I met a fellow from that I was in boot camp basic with.
Okay.
I met there, which we were good friends for all, you know, all the while we were there.
Okay.
And that was just classroom. The weekends were free.
Okay, your evenings were free too?
Evenings were free, but we studied a lot.
So what kind of training did you get there? What did you learn?
Mostly forms.
Okay.
Just what type of forms they are, how you fill them out, how they're routed, you know, where they go, where the supply centers are, how you do your priorities. It just got you ready to fill a slot on a ship in this capacity.
Okay.
And from...
So how did life in that barracks differ from what you'd experienced?
Oh, well, now you're back out in the normal world.
Okay.
We still did calisthenics. We still wore uniforms. We were, of course, you know, you would salute an officer.
Right.
Our instructor was a chief petty officer.
You'd go to meals?
We'd go to meals.
Together?
Yeah. That was a long walk because we'd have to go from where we were back to the actual naval base to where the cafeteria was or the mess hall.
So your barracks were not on the base?
They were on, there's a training, there's the naval station.
Okay.
Which is where all the ships and all the regular Navy units,
right.
That's the active base.
Right.
And then we were, you know, using blocks, maybe four blocks away.
Okay.
Which was the training center, training command. That's where the whole separate area of barracks.
Okay. So you had to walk to the base for your meals?
So we'd walk to the base for our meals.
As a unit?
No, on your own.
Oh, just on your own.
Okay. That was okay. And you had time to eat.
Nobody rushing you.
No. And they had a theater on base. In fact, one night, we're at the theater, and it was one of the buildings where the roof had a girder curve like a arch.
Uh-huh.
And we're watching a movie, and all of a sudden you feel this something. Didn't know what it was. And I looked to my left, and the left side of the movie theater was up here. And it was an earthquake.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden everybody started yelling and running out, and somebody up in the back yelled, and just, I mean, really yelled. And then it was very orderly, and we went out and marched to the sidewalks, and the glass was broken all over the place. Sidewalks were cracked.
Right.
It was a pretty good jolt, and so it was an experience. It was interesting.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what you did with your free time. You said it was a movie theater. What else?
A friend that worked at American in Chicago, transferred out to San Diego. And he was a single fellow. He had a nice big Continental convertible. And so he'd go up. That's where we went on the weekends. he'd come pick me up with the convertible, and off we'd go. And,
okay.
And we did our thing. And at that time, they had, they were called interline parties. And people from all the different airlines would, it would be an organized dance and a party. And so we went to those all the time and met, a lot of girls and danced and,
So you did a lot of your socializing with civilians.
Yes, yeah.
Did you do anything on base for relaxation with the other guys, or did you really?
Nah, just sitting in
civilian.
Sitting in the barracks, just a lot of talking. There we would do a lot of letter writing.
Uh huh. Did you write often, or did you get packages, or?
No, I wrote often.
Okay.
That was the first chance to really jam in the Navy. I'm communicating now. And that time was fun. That was a good time. I was watching a ship being built over on the other side by where the Navy base was.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a shipyard across the bay that I was watching the ship being built. And after the 3 months, that's where my orders were. I was supposed to go to that ship.
To that ship that you'd watched being built.
It was the USS Concord. But the commissioning was delayed. This was in March. The commissioning wasn't going to be until November. So they didn't want me hanging around all that time.
Okay.
So they cut me new orders, and I had a choice. I could take a destroyer from Norfolk, Virginia, or if I extended my enlistment 3 months, I could get shore duty and go to England. So I called American to make sure I could stay this extra 3 months. It wouldn't be, no problem. So I went to England for 3 months. And,
okay.
You know, extended another 3 months.
And it was shore duty in England?
There was shore duty.
And what was shore duty?
Not sea duty. Yeah. I wasn't on a ship. But, I went and...
How did you get there, first of all?
Flew from Chicago to Newark, New Jersey, and went to McGuire Air Force Base.
Was this on military transport?
This was commercial there.
Okay.
And then military over the water to Mildenhall, which was Mildenhall, Suffolk, England. And that's
okay.
The Naval Air Facility there. And the Naval Air Facility was just one hangar, about 120 men and officers, and this huge Air Force Base.
Okay.
So we had our own little niche. They were involved in, you know, alerts and doing all kinds of military things.
Okay.
We worked 9 to 5 and had the weekends off.
Okay.
And our basic mission was we flew mail, parts, and supplied most of the submarine bases in that area.
Okay.
So we supported the fleet. We had old airplanes.
These were naval pilots that you
were
working with?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
This was all regular Navy now. But most of it, they call it the Black Shoe Navy.
Okay.
And the Airedales.
What's the difference?
Well, the Black Shoe Navy is, you're on ships most of the time. So my rating, I would have been a Black Shoe.
Uh-huh.
And there were others that were...
In the air.
Naval Aviation.
Right.
So they were all aero something or other. That parachute packers. They had hydraulics. Just everything all the mechanics for aircraft, though, but not for ships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything was just a different direction. But because of my relative exposure to aircraft with American,
mm-hmm.
it was kind of neat. You know, I knew a lot about...
So your civilian work helped you a little bit with your military?
Yeah, it did. Just as far as, you know, they'd ask for a part, I knew what it was.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So you were doing the storekeeping?
I was doing the supply. There were...
Right.
How many orders were there? We had a senior master, chief petty officer, Chief Alfonso. We had... 2 first-class petty officers. Of course, our supply officer was Lieutenant Kibler. And they were down in the office area. Then there was a supply area. And then we were in the back of the supply area. And there were 2 petty officers, no, 3 petty officers, a first-class petty officer, and then 2 seamen, which I was one of. And then we actually filled the orders.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part did all the bill paying and the record keeping, all that kind of stuff. They wore what was called undress blues. It wasn't your top uniform, but it was a blue uniform. And,
okay.
We wore the work uniform.
And what was your work uniform?
Dungarees shirt and pants. And
okay.
A light blue.
Right.
But they could take a beating, you know. It's a,
right.
And it was fun. We were on one side of the hangar, and all the hard workers were on the other side of the hangar. That we had 3. The civilian version would be a DC-3. Again, the Navy called it an R-4D.
Okay.
It's a 2-engine propeller aircraft, piston driven. We had 2. They were called Beechcraft Bonanzas. They were a small 2-engine aircraft. And their purpose was to be there for pilots down in London, where the embassy was, and and when the fleet came in, that they could keep up their air hours mm-hmm. and not lose their flight qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
At the, And then we had another airplane. Ooh, what was it designated? But that was the air, the, here it is, the, it was a Navy Convair C-131.
Okay.
And that airplane was designated the Admiral's aircraft down in London.
Okay.
And that airplane was worked on every day. That was polished. The interior was like a, well, like Air Force One, but not on that scale, you know, because
right.
it was a much smaller airplane, but it was, it wasn't rows of seats, you know, it was
mm-hmm.
a lounge here, and so that was the baby. There was only one pilot that would ever fly that plane, and but the others, it was fun. It was.
So tell me a little bit about what your life was like in London. What were your barracks like?
Our barracks was a two-story building. Center entrance, so there were, you could either go left or right.
Was it the rows of
no,
bunks? Or
no,
was
there,
it
there we
rooms?
Had we had our lockers, and we set them up in, oh, kind of an L shape. So you would have a one rack in there with two people.
Okay.
And it was like a little room.
Okay.
There was a narrow entrance, and it was private. It really was.
Bunks or?
Yeah, bunks again, too. One bunk, two
right.
people. And some people lived off base. You could do that.
Nobody coming in and
throwing nobody,
stuff out of your locker
no,
anymore.
No. The only time they'd wake you up was if you had duty and you had to go on watch. Again, weekends were free most of the time. We had a we had an English fella come in there. Dennis, his name was Dennis the Bloke. That's what we called him. And we all paid him a little something to keep the area clean.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, the floors were always in excellent shape. So we didn't, you know, it was our responsibility. We didn't have to do it because it was always nice. We paid him to do it. And he was a character. He, a real wheeler dealer. he was fun.
But he kept the place clean, and you
right.
didn't have to do it.
Right. We had a master at arms. He was a mm-hmm. first-class petty officer.
Did he know about Dennis the Bloke?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Because he had access to everything. He had keys, too. Outside of our barracks behind was a Quonset hut. And there was a little recreation area. I think there was a pool table back there. And then it was divided, and then there was a poker table. And we would play poker in there a lot of times. Just a little bit to get away from us. And then
mm-hmm.
there was a street behind that. On the opposite side of that street was the Enlisted Men's Club. Now, that was the Petty Officers Club, which is where we went all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And opposite of that was called the Airmen's Club. Which was, if you weren't a petty officer or an E3 or below, is what.
Okay.
And it wasn't planned that way, but it ended up that the Airmen's Club was the black club.
Okay.
And the Petty Officer Club was the white club.
Okay.
There was definite. There wasn't forced discrimination. It was voluntary discrimination. That they didn't.
Just voluntary separation.
Nobody wanted to mix. But,
okay. And this was around 1968, 69.
Okay. In our detachment, we only had one black fella in the whole. And we did have some fellows
mm-hmm.
that mixed very freely with the black, and they would go over there, but they were always kind of like an outcast.
Okay.
Just. It was
which
different.
Really kind of reflected the way things were in the
yes.
States.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think even more so because there are a lot of people from the South in the service, at least
mm-hmm.
in the area I was involved in. And I think that it carried over. And,
okay.
And I, to me, it never bothered me. I mean, you know, at,
right.
where I grew up, you know, in Chicago, there were, again, I mean, I guess it was similar. There was a demarcation, but it was.
You could mix.
Yeah, it didn't never bother me.
Mm-hmm.
But the base there was, like I say, it was a big, big Air Force base. And they flew C-130s, which were cargo aircraft.
Right.
And they flew over to Europe. And we were the entrance point to Europe.
Okay.
So they, like when I came in on that flight out of Dover, Delaware, it was just a charter carrier. And maybe once or twice a week, one would come in. And they were called the Freedom Birds. And everybody landed there. Anybody based in England got off there. And then it went from there to Frankfurt. And everybody based in Germany got off in Frankfurt. So that was one of the missions of the base. About 7 or 8 miles away from us was another base called Lakenheath. And that was the military base. They flew the fighters there.
Okay.
And that, so every once in a while they'd come in to our base, you know, a couple planes at a time. And and they were the F-4 Phantoms, and it was always more interesting to watch them than one of the cargo planes.
Right.
What else was on that base? There was a top secret group. I have a book in front of me that I'm looking at here. It's a history of Mildenhall, the whole base from when it was first commissioned. It was a British Air Force base to maybe in the 1970s, the whole history. And it's in this book, so it's not classified, that this, it was called Silk Purse. And you couldn't get near this building. They had Marine sentries, were the only Marines that I ever saw in Europe. And they flew the equivalent of a 707, but it was filled with communication gear.
Okay.
And there was one in the air all the time. And that was the command post, the European command post in the air, that should something happen in Europe and the ground forces are hit and everybody's wiped out, that there was communication.
Okay.
That they could run everything from that aircraft. But nobody got near those planes. Nobody got near that. It was very, very top secret. What else? We were in an area, it's about 70 miles north of London. They call it the Midlands. And the area directly around the base was an area called the Fens, F-E-N-S. And it's kind of a marshland.
Okay.
And they do farm, but they farm peat. You know, it was a very boggy area. And it was flat, very flat area. The town itself was a nice little town. But
did
we
you
didn't
feel very welcome?
Did
they ignore you? Were they curious?
It depended on cities where you went. London was no problem. It was you just mixed it. We would not wear our uniforms off base.
Okay.
Because of all the protests and everything about Vietnam.
Right.
You would not wear your uniform. But we never had a problem. I never had a problem.
Okay.
Dealing with anyone. Yeah, everybody was very friendly. We got to see a lot of historical. That's what we did on the weekends. I had a friend. Mm-hmm. His name was John Abel. We would go. He had a car at that time. So we'd jump in the car and we'd go someplace every weekend.
So
we got to see England.
Right. You showed the Trooping of the Colors.
Yeah, we went to London for the Trooping of the Colors is the Queen's birthday. And that's a very formal parade. And they ride in the luxury carriage. It's pulled by the horses. And that is very, very impressive. But my first landing in England, when we came in, it was at night. And the first sight I saw was amber streetlights,
okay,
which are common here now.
Right.
But they weren't then. All we had was the mercury vapor in, around here. They were all blue. I saw the orange, and this is different. You know, that's what registered. This is different. And it was also foggy.
Orange and foggy.
Yeah. So that was different. That was my first impression of England. Was it? It's not the same. You know, it's, and as you would drive, the English were very formal people. They had nothing. The people were very, very poor, really. They suffered a lot from World War II, and it still had not caught up. Mm-hmm. They were like us in the 50s, probably. But what struck me was farmers would be out in the field riding on their tractor, and they're wearing a sport coat. they just always, it's probably the only sport coat they had, but they wore it all the time.
Because that's what you wore.
It was that you were foreign. You wouldn't dare go out without a coat. You know, until you had to look decent.
Yes. We're a little more casual
yeah.
in this country.
Oh, yeah, very much. Let's
so
see.
Did
there
you
were,
get to do a lot of sightseeing?
We did. We did. We went to, well, Cambridge was very close to us. And, of course, Cambridge University is there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we did was they call punting the Cam. The Cam River runs through the campus. And they have boats that are like a big rowboat, but with a flat bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And you pole. You take
right.
a long pole, and you just go along. And it's an area they call the Backs. And
okay.
it's the buildings, the old buildings, which are very old. And then these beautiful lawns come down to the river. It was one of the nicest days I had there. It was just beautiful. It was just, there was a bridge that came over that was enclosed. I don't know how many hundreds of years old. You know, that's what's impressive. You look at a building and, you know, it was built in 1100.
Right.
You know, my goodness, you know, you can't even imagine that. Oh, where all did we go? All these cathedrals. Just cathedral and cathedral.
So you got to do some sightseeing.
We did. Brass rubbing, where you take a sheet of, I don't remember what kind of paper it was, we tape it up on the headstones in cemeteries,
mm-hmm.
and take a black, I think it was charcoal marker, and we would do brass mm-hmm. rubbings of these old headstones. So I don't know what happened to them. I don't have any.
lot of history there.
Yeah.
And you communicated with your family?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Did you, when you were there, you know, you knew that everything was going on in Vietnam.
Yeah, I did.
Did you meet anybody who had been there, or did anybody?
No, not really.
Okay.
Did you get
a lot of word of what was happening there?
No, we were on the other side, and I was just so naive about the whole thing.
Because you mentioned the, you know, protest, you know, people would protest.
The only time we ran into a protest was we marched in a formal parade
mm-hmm.
in a town. It was called Bury St. Edmunds. And it wasn't real far from us. But we had our dress uniforms, which was the only time I think we wore them, except for the change of command. Well, you wear your dress blues. You wear your medals rather than the bars.
Mm-hmm.
You have a white web belt that you wear. You wear white gloves and white leggings, like spats.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very sharp, very sharp looking. And then I still remember we formed up in a square there in Bury St. Edmunds, and next to us was a British Marine detachment. They were sharp. They were sharp. And their sergeant major, he would yell at them. I couldn't understand a word that he said. But they would snap, and the British soldiers wear these hobnail boots.
Okay.
And when they snap to them, they kind of jump. to make that sound really echo, and they were impressive. But that in that parade, there was a group where they were carrying caskets, and we were labeled as baby killers, and mm-hmm. And that really we're not like that. You know, right. That's, you know, it struck me, you know, that, because we were so far removed from everything that they had no idea what was going on at home.
So they were protesting the American military, even
yeah.
though your group had nothing
right.
to do, and you
right.
really didn't have a lot of knowledge of
right.
what was going on.
Right.
Okay.
I didn't know what was going on at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that that's when the riots went on here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
We were over
right.
there. I had no idea what was going on.
Okay.
It just...
you were in a different world.
Yeah. I really was.
So,
it was only afterwards that I learned
right.
all about the what was going on. And I really then got into the Vietnam, everything from the beginning to the end. And
mm-hmm.
and I, it really was a waste.
Right.
I mean, it was a waste. I went in being very patriotic, very, you know, this is my, it's my job.
Mm-hmm.
I owe this to my country. And then after all of that, it's like, what a waste.
Right.
You know, and you're doing it for nothing. You're not going there to win the war. You know, the way they, it's all politics. It still is.
Right.
It's,
well, let's talk just for a minute. Let's see. You were in England for how long?
2 years.
2 years. Okay. So you finished your 2 years there?
That's where I, yeah. That was my whole tour.
Okay. And then what happened at the end of the 2 years?
I was separated. I went to Philadelphia. That was the base that I got separated from. Before I quit, there was there were two things that took place that I remember on that base.
Okay.
One.
This was still in England.
Right.
Okay.
One, an Air Force sergeant took one of these C-130s, which was supposed to be impossible to fly for one person. He took off and he was going to come home. Well, he took off and he got over the English Channel. And by then, all the fighters were up there. And
oh, yeah.
He wasn't going anywhere. They were over the English Channel. And eventually, he crashed and killed it. And, you know, he died. And,
mm-hmm.
and but that was in this book.
Uh-huh.
You know, I remember that. And it's in this book of Mildenhall. So it happened. It really... the other thing was, that is not in this book. But we... something happened. And to this day, I don't know what it was exactly. I think I know. That it was a Russian submarine that was in trouble, and the Russians weren't letting anybody near them, but the Americans wanted to get there.
Right.
They wanted the submarine.
Right.
And all the ships that were in England, they left. They just took off. They, boom, off they went. And the
away from or towards?
Right.
Away from
England, just yeah. right away. They just left.
They didn't want anything to do with it.
They had hundreds of men still in, you know, in England. The captain wasn't on the ship. The executive officer wasn't on the ship. This was on the Yorktown, the aircraft carrier. They just went, boom. And we ended up with their crew. They would fly their crew into Mildenhall, and they stayed in our barracks
uh-huh.
until they could be reflown out to their ship afterwards. To this day, I don't know what happened. That was so critical that all these ships had to go now, you know,
right.
boom. And they did.
Well, this was still during the Cold War.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of
suspicion
on all sides.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know what... I think I know from reading a book, but the dates were about right. But that was...
What do you think
another
it was?
Experience. I think it was with the submarine deal. That,
okay.
That it was a big deal. It was... There was a lot of tension there.
Right.
a lot of tension. But those two things that I wanted to
okay.
get in, because I remembered them. But then I went to Philadelphia...
Just to flow on, did you fly across on a military?
That was military into Dover again.
Okay.
And then...
you were separated in Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia. And we were supposed to have... Again, I was in what they called a transit barracks.
Right.
And you're supposed to have duties, you know, during the day. And mm-hmm. well, I didn't do anything. I left the base. I was
now, when you were separated, was this... a complete discharge, or because
no, that
of the
was I was separated to report back to
the reserves.
To the reserves.
Okay.
Where I had 2 years more of active
reserve duty.
Reserve duty, where I had to go every week.
Was that in Chicago?
Same place.
Okay.
And then the last year was, I was on the rolls, but I didn't have to do anything.
Okay.
So it was a total 6 year obligation, with 2 years being active duty.
And when you came back. Your family was glad you were back.
Oh, yeah. And I went back to work at American and stayed there for 12 years. It was good. One other thing when we were in England was this friend of mine, again, John, we went on a religious retreat.
In England?
Well, it was from England and we went to Germany. We went to Birch's Garden, which is the beautiful area in the Bavarian Alps. Well, we flew over and we took off. So we did nothing at all with...
You had your own retreat.
we were not involved with the retreat at all. And we hit a ball, man. We went to Salzburg in Austria, the area where The Sound of Music was made. We went through a salt mine where they had like banisters going down from level to level, and you put on a leather thing to cover your seat, and you straddle it like being on a toboggan, and down you went from level to level. That was cool. And then we went to, it was Hitler's mountain retreat.
Okay.
The Eagle's Nest.
Right.
And that was moving to me. It was that this was real. You know, that Hitler wasn't...
He wasn't a figure.
Was real. And to get up there, the road was so steep, and they were saying that, you know, you could just picture where the SS emplacements were. And,
mm-hmm.
And we got up there, and to get into it, we went into an elevator, and the elevator went straight up the center of the mountain to get up to the top. And the interior of the elevator was all gold.
Wow.
It was really, really neat. But I see these pictures where they're on the veranda, you know, and he's standing and looking out, and Eva Braun is sitting on his side. And, yeah,
that's what it was.
That's what it was.
So you had a chance to see some really historic sites.
Yes, yeah.
Things that...
But I didn't want to let... That was one of the highlights. And then we flew back.
So when you were done, you went back to your job at American?
I went back to American. I met my wife. She worked for American. Yeah, I got married about a year after I got back. And then she became a flight attendant. And she became based in Buffalo, New York.
Okay.
And I was here. So it took a little while till we got together.
So you got together in the same city?
Being together. I did a lot of commuting. Had two kids, a boy and a girl. Girl came first, Karen, and then Mark. I don't know how we did it. I worked for American for 12 years. I left there because I was having physical problems. My stomach and just the nerves were getting to me. As soon as we got to the big airplanes, the DC-10s and the 747s, and the whole job changed from one of really talking to people, and it was really nice. You know, now it became herding them on. You know, you're dealing with so many people.
Right.
And at that point, then they started getting more automated. People could check in at the ticket counter up in the front. Now we were dealing with computers. Before, I didn't have computers. it was just getting too much for me. And that's when I quit. My father-in-law wanted me. He was a cleaner, a dry cleaner. He had a couple plants. He wanted me to get with him, and we would do a drapery business, taking down draperies. Well, I did that for 5 years, but I never got the support that I thought I was going to get. Then I got into the commercial travel agencies, did business travel. Eventually I got hired at Argonne National Laboratory, which I loved. I was there for 10 years, and we got outsourced.
Mm-hmm.
So then I got a job with another agency, and I did the corporate travel for Spiegel. And what a difference. From Argonne, they fly everything government, everything is cheap. And,
right.
I go to Spiegel and I'm writing $5,000 tickets, and they're going around around the world, and all the top hotels, and of course they went out of business after a year. So now I'm in the same position that I was after Argonne, and it was so frustrating. That was a real bad separation. I just had it. I was fed up. So I got a job as a school bus driver.
Okay.
And I just worked part-time driving a school bus. I did that for 10 years, and last November I quit, and here I am.
Okay. Well, when you left the service, did you consider or did you take advantage of any education programs or anything?
No, I didn't. I could have. The only thing, I'm taking advantage of the VA now.
Okay.
Because I was always on my wife's policy, and mm-hmm. and she lost her job. And so I'm taking advantage of the medical with the VA.
Right. When you mentioned a little bit earlier, if you'd like to expand on that a bit, how did your time in the military impact the way you think about things today, and the way you think about life, the way you think about events that are taking place in the world?
Oh, the military is necessary. I personally grew up in the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you mature. You go in as a kid and you come out as a man. It's you take personal pride. I'm proud I served.
Mm-hmm.
It's... It directed me, I think. Because I do the job. You know, I know what's got to be done, and I do it, and I follow it through. My house is neat. I learned. I wasn't that neat before I went in, but I carried that over. My experience was not typical of being in the military, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I regret not being on a ship.
Okay.
You know, that I feel like I really missed being the real Navy. You know, that when I left England, I don't know if it was something they do all the time or not, but, you know, they try to get you to stay in. But my division officer said, you know, that he would recommend me for officer candidate school if I wanted to go there. I thought about it a lot. If I had gone in as an officer, I probably would have made it a career. At this point, I was ready to go home. Yeah, it was.
Was it what was happening in the world that made you ready to go home, or you just
wanted? No, it was just my friends were getting married. You know, it was
just general life events.
And the military is not for a married person, not at all. I would not recommend it for anybody. But it's a real hard life for the people that I saw that were married and they were enlisted. It was real, real hard.
Do you have any friends that you've kept in touch with?
No, like I say, this one fellow that Christmas cards is about it at this point. That,
uh-huh.
But for about, maybe up to 10 years, we got together at least once a year. He lives in Pennsylvania, Cresco, Pennsylvania. But I think about him a lot of time. I think about a lot of the people I was with, and I'll Google them up, but nothing ever. It was fun. But it wasn't typical.
So, but you said your military experience had a positive effect on your life.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. I think a lot of the time I was there, I felt like it was wasted time.
Mm-hmm.
But I really didn't know what the detachment was really doing. You know, I was just in this my little cubicle, and
right.
I'd send a part over there, but I didn't know what the part was for. And we had we had some other stories. There were a group of flyers. I don't know how they even had it all set up, but if they'd go to Europe, and they'd come back with grandfather clocks. And then they were selling grandfather clocks, didn't they? Well, they got caught by British Customs, and that was a big to-do for a while. And I mentioned these little Beechcraft aircraft that we had. We had one lieutenant that was a real ladies' man. He'd come up on the weekends. And he'd take the planes out, show his
His date.
His date. Yeah, let's go fly over here, okay? Until he got caught. So there were typical stories.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us before
we? Yeah, I appreciate the chance to do this. It's. I can't see how this should go to the Library of Congress. It was fun talking about it.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing your story, and we're going to go offline now.
Thank you.